Dean, I have a bit of a buzz, and special thanks to Paul. I was just thinking there, we didn't come up, there's a great essay written by Joseph O'Connor in one of the sections of Paul, where he talks about wanting to do a poetry reading, or a reading of a fiction, book signing at a bookshop somewhere in New York, and arriving to find a mountain of copies of his latest work on the shelves, and a very pretty assistant manager explaining how they had Roddy died the previous week and sold 25,000 copies in the one night, and the place was packed and traffic jams out there, you couldn't get in, you couldn't budge, and of course when Joe Connery there was a reception in the room. So Paul would be very nicely filling me in on how successful this series has been until tonight. That he says this is the worst attendance that any guest poet has ever drawn to this venue. So I claim the distinction of having banished people from this series to the point where you're now going to abandon this venue and go elsewhere, hoping that you can bring back the crows that I drew away at night. So I'm very grateful to y'all for showing up, and we'll see what we can do to make it as painless as possible tonight. And totally undeserved profile. What I thought I'd do is read you a poem, and one of the difficulties, it's not really difficult, but one is if you're writing in Irish and you lean very heavily on translation, is that very often the translation comes a long time after the poem was written, and so there's a kind of a time lag, and you're not getting a reaction to the more recent poem that you've written. So some of these translations are a little bit clumsy and a little bit awkward, but they're the freshest things that I have, some of these poems, and I just wanted to see what kind of response I get them. Mercifully, they're shorter than the poems that I've been writing before that, so we get through them in fairly quick order. And I'll read two very short poems. This one is called Leigh to Sira, which I've translated at the end of the holidays, and I'll read them in English first. They're in Irish, rather, it's fairly simple, and then do a quick translation. Leigh to Sira. Egdera an tiasúir an a dechair go huina le liroi tra fin sfeira se bila san. Chatham chias in a dini hirach tímpul na dini snaw la de candidate bashir van rin kini le bruch an frí re le skrida. At the end of the holiday, the dechairs are as lonely as a beach ball under the stairs in the orphanage. They stand in two straight lines at either side of the swimming pool, their hands tied behind their backs, prisoners at the edge of a pit, waiting to be shot. This is a slightly more gentle one, just called Mahuna, which means forgiveness. It's gather than a packy of battle than barring, nor having couple through a nuot to be broke the riot of their mighty, a threatening furta or snapta, they row on their courage, in Mocklin in a Friday. It's difficult not to forgive the rain it sins, when a black horse cantered down to the edge of your vision in the morning, its perfect skin gleaming like a seal on a rock in the arms of the sea. Slightly longer point, one of the difficulties if you write occasionally political poems, as I sometimes do, is that things can move very quickly and your point can fall out of date very fast. Happily, nothing ever seems to change in Irish politics, so things don't go out of date that quickly. The only mistake out of date is that everybody's favourite fascist Michael McDougall is no longer minister for justice or anything else. Yeah. But he's calling all my books, even in his absence. One of the most important books I think to come out of Ireland in the last 10 to 15 years is the story of the Rockport Five, told by the men and their wives in their own words. An extraordinary book, it seems to me, which has a ring of truth on every page. And if it is truthful, it tells us more about what Ireland has become than any documents that emerges from any government white paper on this, that or the other. If it is even half true, then what's happening up in Mayo and North Mayo at the moment has implications far beyond the geographical limits of the area involved. It seems to me that there are two or three venues at the moment where Ireland is struggling for a sense of itself. Shannon Airport is one of them, pretty obviously, but Belfry and Rockport is another place where a last stand is being made on behalf of something, or something, or stand up for something. The other thing I'd like to explain is I've made a bit of a play in Irish on Bertie Ahern's name, which was translated Irish, that Ahern is Ahtiern, or Ahtiern, so it would literally translate as hot lord. Okay? So you hear that coming through. So, here we go. It's called Unnuach Achreva, the new headline, a repeat broadcast, if you're not going to A price of all the titteries are minded to their troth or politulia. Steamish Ella will be a lawyer, but martyr of Abigail. O father, the holus Mathenola, near Maria, the Eritrean being a host, the night dead in you. A Fadai Ellen Treshilla, on a Gavana Ia, an institute commercial of Billy Barry, if they close our air and salad and water faster. Ni more not in Gritfall, Trasura, nor a Gershius, who would have let Tanner. Dari or Tira Mami. My elder and Ari is a fool of the boat on Tishi or Tiena. A Yado is their known as the Urlawi Salora, or Kelm or Deer and a couple of Farmaka. A Kurame and Anisto, nor Rushe Kurtier in Manako with Novish, a breath of fame, Cheshun Kail. Tan Kunt O'Reilly Sosta, who in a Pauline Sosta, nor who is a Farfora with an Adway Suing, the Dush of Rio, which you knew. A correlation of colour of the sun, nor full of old straggler galvire of an arrow, for minutes your wish failed in her phone. Agat, as the garba owned his name and the glory of the kind regression, his being they are a wee in a hut. Use headlines for repeat broadcast. The price of oil was falling again this morning to the political correspondent, another sign that God and his blessed mother are good. As far as the expert can tell, not that many people have been killed so far in Baghdad this morning. But Dáil Éireann has just returned from their night classes at the Billy Barry Institute for Communication, and the news is bound to improve. You'd almost believe the opposition now when they say they're scandalized. Honest to God, man, we're scandalized over the money that turned up from the Taoiseach's pocket a while back. This is his godfather, of course. That the soft-spoken spokesperson for our horsemaster, the man of the people, who slipped it in there without him knowing when he visited them in Manchester before Christmas. It was his birthday, after all. The Count O'Reilly is satisfied that the police are satisfied that they didn't overreact when they pacified the peaceful protest in North Mayo. Medical attention has been given to those who didn't yet hear the cheerful response of the minister that many of the time a man's mouth broke his nose. And what's more, to the grandson of Owen McNeill, the famous Gaelic scholar, silence really is golden up there in Ballinaboy. This is about my 10.5 hoping, I'd be very honest, and that's the reason that less people get tonight than other Monday nights, because they're all welcoming home the ladies' football team. Which have been entirely appropriate on the final of the decision. There's a poem called Aine Destina, Destina's daughter. Destina was the mother of Cruchulain, and there's debate every now and again amongst feminist literary critics with regard to what would happen if Shakespeare had a sister. Could she possibly have been as great as he was? Would she ever have written? Could her work have seen the light of day because of prejudice against women and so on? I was thinking in their situation, Steve's question for us would not be that, but if Cruchulain had a sister, what would she be like? Okay, so I've been kind of mulling this over for a number of years, and then I was a blue one day, I was walking down a tunnel in Galway, and I saw Cruchulain's sister, a girl coming from a Camogie match, with a big scar on her cheek that was obviously just freshly inflicted, a hurley that clearly showed the size of being the worst for wear, and a look in her eyes that said, if she were the one heading to the Smith feast in mythology, she remained even greater shit of the dog than her brother did, the number of story was put on disemboweling the dog. So that's all referred to the poem. But the reason I'm doing tonight for the Cork Ladies football team is that I published this poem a few years ago, and I received a letter after it from a man who's putting together a collection of poems in the celebrating glorious Cork sporting victory. I was an honour to be to receive the letter, and he asked could he print this poem, and I said, I'd be delighted, absolutely fantastic. So I was boasting about it to everybody that I was going to be included in this fantastic anthology of poetic responses to the glory of Cork achievements in the area of hurling, football and camogie. And then I got a second letter from him to say that on mature reflection, he had decided not to include the poem. He said, there's a reference in the last, in the last line of the poem that dirt for foil at the Dukeshi for father they coach her Cullen. Blood will be spilt when she arrives at Cullen Beaks, like in the Smith. So I thought there was nothing toward there, and he said, he thought there was a suggestion there that the girl in the poem might have been involved in something as ignoble as inflicting misery with the hurley on somebody opposing her. And he said, I know now, in the olden days we say, like, blood would be spilt before we went out. But he said, that was just a turn of phrase, you know. We never really meant to harm anybody. And I think that might explain why we're not doing so great the last few years. But he said, in any case, that he said, you're obviously a very sophisticated person and you get the layer of meaning in this, but he said, your ordinary person might suggest that you're suggesting that this girl would actually harm somebody. And I was thinking, but I'm not actually suggesting it at all. It seems to me clear she's already inflicted harm on several people for the sake of Hurley. But anyway, I was omitted from the section, and I'm very bitter about it, as you think. Your clean next one for the top lady of football. Her bowman which I knew was a cutting fume, a shoe with a drawn tidy. Might have been showy as a shill of one of the or here to let him lock her, a wink in her claw at the end. Tom Mount's first course, the mind of Triana, is marked already or a cruel than an all. The fire from him are the cruel, it's a come on for cast the jewel, the passion come on in the shop, and queen it. In a glass, dirt for frill of a duplicity, or father of a kosher calling. Destiny's daughter. On Newcastle Road, a fair-haired girl is walking towards town, an ash stick swinging her hand, easy as a lock of hair dancing on her forehead. As you'd expect, there's a nick in the seething wood, another on the girl's cheek, and a fire of combat blazing in her eyes. Her hip bones jut and angle, turned like the blade of a hurley that grew unexpectedly in her face. Blood will be spilt when she arrives at Cullen's feet. Just a slight change of tone, but keep it on in a similar way in another respect. A fairly new point about Madra. It's a point about my biggest hero in the last few years in the world, which I'm thankful to the hero, a small terrier dog who lives in our housing estate, and a completely unjustified confidence in his own ability to take on articulated lorries and come out flying. He's been knocked down at least three or four times that we know of. His back doesn't quite go in a straight line anymore. And yet high enough to try and drag himself back out into the middle of the road and plant himself there, ready to take on all comers. I keep referring to him as he, but he through a litter of pups recently, a miraculous crowd he is capable of meeting all the challenges of human life, as you mentioned, Cain and life. And this is a point from him, it's called Mantra. That's a good name in the translation, but it's slightly longer. You think by the gash of him, with his two long necks and his boot by head, your two phantom hips shoved deep in the pockets of his invisible trousers, and it's best to get out of his way. He's laying on a three-legged stool with one leg shorter than the other, since the lorry from Longford refused to step aside, but he followed the arcs of a smell he didn't recognise across Camp Street. He thinks of his body as a sacred site or a holy temple since then, a daily miracle that defeats the sceptical priest and the agnostic vet. He can't believe that busloads of pale pilgrims have yet to visit him on their way to Knock. He walks sideways, as if he'd taken lessons in deportment from the broken trolley in the supermarket. That day the left rear wheel went unofficially on strike, as I tried to steer my dignity through the aisles of prosperity and gossip out of the car park of respectability, where I finally threw away the last shred of my bruised and broken self-confidence. The semaphore of his tail reminds me it's time we were going. There's a lorry driver in Mountford, he says, who did the life of Riley's dog for the past year. His time is up, he says, and it's time we paid him a little visit. This is a poem, one of my favourite poets is an American poet called Galway Kinnell, and he read at the Court Festival in Galway a couple of years ago, and it really was an extraordinary reading. It just managed to come in right on the perfect wave, and you know, on stage, the first thing he did was he recited a poem by Patrick Kavanagh that he had by heart, and everything after just came in behind that. It was a perfect entrance in the just the right place at the right time. And he was a kind of man, I know people who write poetry are often very wary about making claims on behalf of poetry that it provides any kind of resolution or any kind of real comfort. You know, John Berryman says in one of his dream songs, these poems are not meant to be understood to understand, they are meant to comfort and to terrify. But even allowing for all that, there was something extraordinarily comforting about being in the presence of somebody like Galway Kinnell, that you had this sense of, he seemed a kind of a priestly sort of person, like he understood things. Now it may be just the kind of thing that you associate with old age, and a very courtly man, who extraordinary manners, like there was a big queue of people to get him to sign their books, and he stood up and shook hands with everybody, and seemed embarrassed while he sitting back down, and signed the books with an old fountain pen. Just a very reassuring presence we all have. So I've written a poem about his reading, essentially this particular one of the poems. And the best lines in the poem are stolen from one of his poems. He has a fantastic poem called St. Francis and the Sow. And I'll read the first half of the poem in Irish and then the translation. So you'll hear when his lines come in, and I try to... It's one of the things when you're writing, sometimes you try to make a graph from another poem. And the thing is, you to repair your own point, to take the grasp, so that it's not quite that noticeable. No, obviously that doesn't work in Irish, because the English sticks out, but see what you think anyhow. This is Galway Kinnell, the pilot. Hasamar to Skúine mar venisha hocket, a good daunte buite mar de glaurur níl a hocka finna sa clua. Nor is eirith in gafir, ní na fithagut, an dinna da chaun an farad a bheir credaloid a lea. No Mara Fane and the Gairi in East the Corner, like Cobrona Yenna, like Cara, and Rathenshire Hillet. No Rahim in the Yower, the Shanna Fion Dui, Bogoyla, Gredmere Punshia, Taka, in Oi to Comra di Hosta, the Gatti in the Lot. Gonna Kadisha Fast the Gahenia, on Dina Vunin, the High of Kubra, than Brian's Wicket, no Gervlovichi in an outdoor fane. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing, though sometimes it is necessary to reteach it in its loveliness. A hangarai lehuidna is lehuishlach tvartate, a hui lehuirin tvart. Tegan, a dhurtam tui, moitur mat sarong ni gat, nach gaan tuidna sa dinu ditche, though sometimes it is necessary to reteach it in its loveliness. We stood in the queue as if we were at a removal, clasping his poems like prayer books to our chest. When he stood up from his chair, it was hard to tell whether it was one of the dead man's brothers shaking your hand, or the corpse himself that had risen from his coffin to shake the hand of a friend he no longer recognised. When he signed our books with an old fountain pen, it was as if St. Francis had taken over from his cantankerous companion at the gates of heaven, that everyone would be let in from here on in by the man who taught the soul with awkward beauty so that it blossomed in its own nature. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing, though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. When his eyes caught ours, we recognised the loneliness and the gentle hurt. I know, his eyes said, a good teacher in the wrong class. There's no need to teach any of you anything about loneliness, though sometimes it is necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. He asked us not to close the books until the ink had dried on the page. When I looked around me, books were shaking themselves dry in the fire of the theatre, like seagulls after a shower of rain, or young goths shaking the handkerchief with their hands to harden the varnish on their blackened nails. And oh, Galway, my old pal, if only our tears would dry as quick and the wound of heart harden. An old one called Dawn Raw. Been with Brian Gunstad, Clushing Fuckle Mavail at Tleska, and Smidrini Glynn at Clave at Vishta, at Tai, Yetta, Ailta. Your schooling Smilver Grist, our Bumming Rist, and our Lord, Nico Bunch of Krill, Bran, Ho Glan, Le Monach, Cru of Olga, Tresha Chaka, Ho Thor, Ho Naeta, Fuck McCorton, Beish and Brian, Gunstad. Love time. We fight all the time. I hear words hurled from my mouth, break in shards of glass and smashed plates on the shut door of your whitewashed face. When I sweep up the shattered bits and pieces of our brittle love, I wouldn't hurt a fly. I feel clean as a constipated monk after a glorious shit. So unburdened, so serene. Fuck the neighbour, may we never stop fighting. Just in case I give a totally wrong impression of my innermost secret nature, I also write this kind of stuff. I'm cool on a kind of shooting deer, chemical calling a tree, faradier, fair as future. In the idea of Shackle May, the Hugh Harbride, the Tridere, most Cummajum, Marvosha, Cora Brinna, her routine play, his Luba Arrogant, her rich beam, Daniel Lynch, Marta Scott, Cardinal Survey, Dunphy McCree, Shackle Tamat, St. Kip Kura, now Jukka, Barra Mulea, Nuridari, and Vian, her whale, Gooling, and Ear, the Kura Kinsh, her raw, and its short chapter, a Brisha, Trelakaka, and Kara. Rain. That perfume she wore in her teens shot through the alchemy of her body. Sea, grass, and fuchsia in 1979. Walked past on the street last night. I couldn't care less as rain. A birthmark on her left ankle and silver bracelets on her untouchable wrist. Like an umbrella in a high wind, my heart turned inside out under a drench of fragrance that left my fingertips bone dry. And the sun rose over her shoulder, tropical flowers, perfumed like skin, burst through paving stone all over the city. I do a couple of curt poems, that's where we are, the poems keep going back to Cork, because I've been away for more than half an hour at this stage. And a lot of these poems were written when I was living in Australia. I was there for about 10 years. And I suppose one thing that happens when you go away from family and the place that made you what you are and who you are is that it only exists in, it's an imagined place rather than a physical place from where I'm in. And after a while it starts to fall apart in your mind, you know. And I mean, I know we've all stories about Joyce sending numerous letters home to find out precisely what shop was on the corner of what street, because your memory is no longer reliable. Okay, so you recreate the place not as a physical location but as an imagined place, and it becomes much more provisional, much more insecure, I suppose. And I found myself writing poems to try and stabilize my own memory of certain places, and this is one of those kind of memory poems. It's called Uncrooked or the Creator. Again, slightly longer, so I'll read a couple of verses in the Irish and then from the translation back to the Irish for a bit around. Sir Irish and all hiding in East, but Shibo Burka East, their Vohr and the Mo Erna, the Gub Smolig of Fogarton Lay, a Knaga, their Scraggle Capine, Gudiel Banya, their Lickum Dorishamo. Sir Hushig and Tid, that the Human Ray of Dreha, the Down Kuli Fainiki, Down Gavuntin or Lower in the Queen, a Gael Garay, who the Lost Queen of all. Before the morning rose from a dark shed below on the Model Farm Road, a thrush's beak announced the day, pecking the tinfoil top of a milk bottle out on the doorstep. Before the house woke from its prenatal sleep, she had the world to herself, a well-mannered world that didn't answer back, giving in quietly to the gentle authority of her hands. When she unmuzzled the spout, cold water nuzzled her hand, licking her dry fingers. When she turned off the tap, the runny nose continued to drip in the sink, and a gimpy kettle lipped on the stove. Nothing was perfect in this pockety house. Chipped dishes welcomed her, plates, mugs and egg cups jostling each other, until she filled their hungry mouths with cornflakes, crisp and frosted grass, handsome eggs with moles on their cheeks, and tea so strong a mouse might scamper across its steaming surface on tiny legs of fillet without drowning. Up the stairs in limbo, land of pillows and blankets, rags of sleep bandaged his brain like cotton wool in an aching ear. He heard the muffled sounds of the small shovel scraping stone as she cleared the ashes of the day gone out and set another day kindling in the cold grave. He heard gusts of static pitched from one end of the Atlantic to the other, churning the airwaves between Reykjavik and Athlone, until she found the right frequency that put Cork at the centre of the world, talking to her quietly in the kitchen, 6 feet under his dream. As morning followed morning, forever and ever it seemed, he heard his world created out of nothing, as it was in the beginning, is now, and shall be for a time to come in the mind of the Creator, until the clock wakes her from her eternal dream. Hula shake wave, static air, shade of downtown and Atlantic air, a umbral ver hunt on air, the right of the Kisaloon, her ancient she and vinity of cream, of her cockpit, a gas or and sea, a kite day or fish with a kitchen, she trail of lashdis or hire. My din in Yegitele, Marshingo Brock, Hula shake fail or propua, snyanu, Marvier douche, or tarnish, or a bake of poise in agony of a horror, no go moose floyd and cloggy as a bring of it, here. To one more kind of 15 of that here, I've been told that this is a very good example of a tradition of post-apocalyptic, whatever that might mean. It's a poem where things start to fall apart, I suppose. It's also an emigration poem. It's almost become unpatriotic now to admit to people, particularly younger than my age, that there was a time when everybody wanted to leave Ireland at the earliest possible opportunity, even if it meant a flattering bus from Tralee to London. And I left in 1987, and I can't really say any great regrets about leaving. Almost everybody knew had already left. I come from a large family, and all my brothers were either in America or London, and I thought there was time that I was gone as well. But we were the kind of generation that were brought up for export, and everybody expected to go away. I'm not saying that I was, you know, driven by famine or poverty or anything like it. It was just what you did when you left. And that was the kind of country it was. And there's a great story that John McGahan tells about being on a building site in London sometime in the 1960s, it must have been, maybe 50s, I think. Was it 50? You know the story? And you correct me if I get any more of it wrong. The story is anyway that they're led from Leitrim, and they're all just miserable because they're not going home for Christmas, and it's a miserable day, and they're a bit hungover, and they're in a porter cabin, and they're reading the paper that's come home, that's been sent over to them from home, and reading out deaths and all the rest of each other. And then one of them reading out gets a bit more cheerful. He says, "Wait till you hear this." He says, "Unprecedentedly heavy rain have deluged the county of Leitrim. Certain parts of the county have become inaccessible, and the temperature rises inside in the porter cabin." They're all very cheered up with the fact that people are miserable at home. And at the end of when they're going back to them, one fellow said, may it climb higher than the trees, that's what. May the puppers have to get to the top of the tree. May it be worse than Noah's ark, that's what. And that was the attitude that people had to the place they left behind. Now, I'm not saying I would possess that, but that's an attitude that is very recent from our history, and yet it's totally hard, and I have to say. So, here's my poem and my contribution to that whole idea of leaving where we're going with this. The poem is called Corcock, meaning cork, but obviously, at the cork in the bog, given how it comes to cork in the translation of cork. Anyway. I'll read the poem. Here's the chapter of an Irish translation. He said, Poor Fluch, our French's key is made Sheilery Sean Mayo, and cracked in a chateau called Lou Le Chagoton, the poor city, Fouille to Le Calla, the Shanaween, Strachahill, and Munner from Dunta, the shree of the fallen cave, the night in her horn in the funk of your deer. It was cold and wet on French's key the day I left, the car tight to the curve at the side of a ship tied up at the pier. Worn out tires from the shut down factory scraped the quay walls where the rats have come ashore. In our submarine town, the river rained down from above. A lifeboat worked its way free from a mooring post across the street from Ford's funeral home. Corporation gutters were choked with rats brought in by the tide as drowned dogs stored away in coal bags were washed out to sea through passage west. The back of the car was warm as a kitchen. Water tight as a fish of ice, and the fingers swollen drop fell on the windscreen, trickled through a crack in the reinforced glass, and along the bridge of our captain's nose, where he sat unmoved at the front seat. When the riverbanks broke behind my father's eyes, tin buckets couldn't bail me out as tears gushed through the eye of a needle, and Jesus wept over my submerged head. Church spires and railway lines crumpled. Millstones and hearts like stone were broken, walls and flagstones buckled as the earth moved and the asthmatic bog filled my lungs again. I couldn't wait to get away from the soft, soft earth that had made me, before the last tear was squeezed from the stone in my heart, before love wrapped itself round my neck, dragging me, drowning, home. Babylon, the draping and trailer all vaults are dismal. Ar y bosh chi yn diwr yrn ac yn bloch yn mawr. Ar y gachaf yn gro, a gro o lai, tîp yn mynd i, yn harn chyp, y poen yn twy, a wain. I think it's still actually the case that one of the most frightening things is a phone going off very late at night, 2 or 3 in the morning, and worse than that even is the doorbell or a knock at the door. And I wrote this poem a couple of years ago, and I'd come to the age of my life when my parents died, and they died in our house, and I had no real understanding of it at the time. We used to come to the priest up and down and visit my granny when she was dying, and I started to imagine that what it must have been like, because I was then at the age my father was when his parents died, I started imagining what it might have been like for him, and knowing when you hear the knock at the door what it must be about. And then it happened again a second time shortly after. So these are two poems that run together. The first is called Inquiador, the first time, and the second one is called The Next Time, Inquiador Era. So I just read a part of it in the air so you get the rhythm of it, and then do the translation. O rail, Clayeen and Dirish, Kirtina who in the region, the maiden do I read, the purple sheath, the mat in the sky, with my glove, not goodly and clear. O Dorshe and Dan Choli, thou hookshe, grog and stooling, the maiden do I nation, the orbit to jump and the hanala gandua. Rear, the clear, O begging do chatter, cuss not, the chains of wood. A gay ship like Lord Queen and Taggart are allish, the gubber are a snap of Nafarin and cheese, for airs and ten, a jump to the shion for those, the fuckle cluster, is lighter than ducker. From the moment the doorbell tore the curtain of his sleep, forcing him to get up and go down among the shadows and the clocks that never sleep. From the moment he left the warm woman to whom he gave unreasonable love and stayed. still had to leave behind in a world where breathing comes easy. Ever since that time, he had to stand in bare feet on his own in the cold, listening to the gentle voice of the priest telling him in a whisper shot through with the kindness of rain that he was dead. The one who subdued his terror long ago with hard words and strong hands that meant no harm. Since the wall of prayer and harsh love words they fit between them from both sides was levelled, a useless wall as high as heaven they built between them at this moment, he never slept or breathed easy. For fear the roar of blood and the broken gust from his mouth would drown out the engine of the car dying on the street outside. The gentle cough of the priest out on the threshold of the world, his holy finger approaching the doorbell for the second time. A second time. Every summer since then, the scent of candles of sorrow lights the loneliness of his house. Since the priest placed his share of the weight of the world on his narrow shoulders, small words, seven times as heavy as the county hall and the Lee Road combined, every step he takes is heavy as a shovel on a wet Sunday in the town of the two bishops. When he comes down to breakfast, he stands to one side of the commotion, his shoulder leaning against the open door, and the shadow of the coffin left on his cheek creeping into his head. The memory of the polished wood is like the mark of a violin under his chin, his eyes full of the merciless light of the other side. When he looks down on us lovingly, there's less than the heat of a candle in his dead eyes. He's surprised that we are still alive. In this case, the line I've taken is from perhaps the most famous song in the Irish language, the most famous love poem perhaps in song in the Irish language, which is called Going Low. I'm sure many of you know it. But there's a great line in Going Low. For the first time she says, I'm going low, my hair, her fatty, get bare my hand, at the snod in the yarn, like it was sailing by, and it's marvelous, it's a mean wee grave, and I feel letting that. If you take me with you across the sea, you have a present every market day, and a Greek king's daughter beside you in bed. And a little time after that, she says, and if we're in a bar, or if we get into a fight or a brawl, I stand beside you, and I punch as good as you can. So there's the two sides of it. So I was at a poetry workshop, a translation workshop actually in Slovenia a couple of years ago. This was one of the poems that was being translated. And he had fierce trouble with this line, which I've taken straight into my own. And it was a Catalan poet who first rebelled against it. And he said, this line just won't work in Catalan. And I said, he said, the Greek king's daughter, what's that all about? And they all said, oh yeah, it won't work in Latin either, and it won't work in Slovenian, and it won't work in Welsh, and what is it all about anyway? And I said, well, you know, Greek king's daughter, very self-explanatory. And they said, well, what does it mean? And I said, well, you know, it means exotic, it means beautiful, it means, and they thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard. They said, a Greek king's daughter, beautiful, exotic, what's exotic, what's beautiful about that? And I said, well, you know, from Ireland anyway, it seems like a fairly extraordinary thing, you know, the Greek king's daughter beside you in the bed. So they said, no, it won't work in any other European language, or whatever peculiarity in Irish, that means a Greek king's daughter, a man of a beauty. So I said, well, how are we going to get around this?
Yeah.
So they kind of paused, and they said, maybe we'll call it an Egyptian king's daughter. And they agreed that that wouldn't work either, and somebody else said Spanish, and the Catalan poets, things like that. So they thought about it long and hard, and then they came back and they said, do you know what it was in Slovenian and Welsh and Latvian and Estonian and whatever other language you can think of? What would work and would be absolutely brilliant, and I'm surprised you didn't think of it. An Irish king's daughter. That would be the most exotic and beautiful creature that any of our languages could imagine. So I suppose that's what the fellow meant, or the girl, whoever called him the poem anyway. This poem uses that line, and you hear it when it comes to it. It's called Crumbling. The other thing is that Jorah Day in Irish, literally God's tear for tears, but for future. Crushy crumb clarence of Ardeen, you skimmel a trefa, so they're madly bow. Mera, Oshin, the Vidur and Cream, the Romishi, the Mwila. Future mine of the Ulisha, Cleany Fuller, Jorah Day. Is Fadale Gershi, the Vasig and Crown, the Yeno, the Mar and Team, or the Gobliunshi. Snarik Trey, or a Law of Yon to Kayin. Is Inini Reed Drake, a Shul, and the Holly Bona, last year got through. Harim Fuller, their Stuck and Cream in a deal. Now favour the Mar and the Barshi, a Clamor, now a Lace. Nor a Irian and Yil, and Yed and Clarend and Vyatus. Brahman Trey, and all over Throne, to show my colour to the dying from Egon and Fane, Gwilym Dyr, Rath, Yuxi, or Fisho, is me favour a hawk of Rayaloon. She planted mountain ash in the garden today, peeling the roots before easing them into the earth. Fingers as slender as the leaves of the tree she chose herself in spite of me. I wanted fuchsia, of course, blood bell, God's tear. She can't wait, she says, for the tree to grow high at the topmost window where she sleeps, earth stained on her torn finger, and a Greek king's daughter walking the white hall behind her eyes. She's left a blood stain on the bole of the tree that the rain's mother can't clean or heal. And the blood rises in the arms of the mountain ash in spite of me. I feel the earth breathing heavily in the bedroom next to mine, in the dead of night in me. God cries buckets of fuchsia, so quiet that no one hears his grief without end. That's wonderful. I'm going to do two more and see what we run with those. This is one called Norhan and Ray or Kurt, and it has a subtitle, Idig the Kor, it's a Bangin, a great pub in Bangin Kush or Dingle Dangle, or whatever. Circuit Bar in the Cartier Bar, and I was only a gig there years ago with John Spillane, and after the gig, it was a great night there, but we were locked in. Very reluctant day, of course, but can you do your find yourself in these situations and you have to make the best of it. Anyway, it turned out to be very extraordinary. There were about 15 or 20 people left on the premises and people were singing songs. And there was a kind of sense very early on the night that people were singing songs and the reaction to them seemed to be greater than was justified by the song. People were getting very emotional about them. And it turned out after a little while that everybody who was in the room was connected to this young man that had died some time previously, very unexpectedly and very suddenly, and we knew him as well. And all the songs were connected to him in some way. And a really, really strange night. There was a guy come up to you at about 3 in the morning and said, "That's what over there, you know, his mother is the one that Kavanagh wrote about the dawning of the day about it." And I thought it was an answer, but it was true anyway, because it was that kind of night. And at about 4 o'clock in the morning, the wind, the door flew open, right, and whatever it was, I feel like it was time to go on, and that's why it's called, when the wind came to visit, when the charcoal started to sign. Here we go. Bullion dower, but I'm doors the monk, say it was, nor a bully she shack, gang cad, gang knock. Grafanig and East, say here being, Marrowing net, young hames of Hunne, Shannon now is not failure of Christ. Ulavine Ella, that are all she reached the Brockman, Honig a law of a cool and an impul, Hanai Bursella, a cool Mogamil. The Mahusa Fane is before, a hook of the Hugh Leah, Koshware and a Farage of Harrison Gunner and Owl, on board Shlown, where the Kotta Jonsa, a split Amstanana, a Kushid and Nail, who Nimona Sun, a Sunny. The during the hour, there's a door to the air, say, what? The pulse of father, a Tashin is a deal, a Gilean is Tina, a Mark, a manager of Rishka, and a deal. and the wind came to visit. I could have sworn the outside door was locked, and she came in without a knock or by her leave, and came up behind me where I sat in the corner, arguing with myself, an old enemy I'd never gotten the better of. One more time before she left me forever, her fragrant arms came round me, her hurt breath on the back of my neck. Even if it was you, sister, who had walked all night by the edge of the sea and over the mountain pass, the road slippery under your damaged feet, and the hailstones of time pouring between you and me, I wouldn't be any more shaken. I could have sworn that all the doors were locked in the long cloistered corridor that stretches as far as where you are, in the furthest away cell in the broken monastery of forgetting. Thank you very much. You've been very patient and very appreciative of the attention given, and I'll read this poem, which is the latest one. It's the most recent poem I've finished, and I've never read it before, so it might be terrible. So I'll know about a split second before I read each line how it's going to go before you even know your title. But it'll be too late. So I just have the other relief to finish and give it a go. And it's a kind of a different point for me as well. So I want to see how it will go. The translation still, I mean, the paint isn't dry on it yet, so it is an indulgence of that. It's called Marmalade. It should be Subarashka in Irish, but Subarashka has no idea that it's a dictionary thing, so Marmalade seems like a warmer word, even in Irish. Here we go anyway, Marmalade. It's kind of a love poem, I think. Here we go. Buinen a chabín den broca subaráise, it lian an anvaidin the black sheriff, Nihat, Minish, Algiers, Morocco, Seville, mar wyl bwoli cwyr, crocta, ar ddeag o'r drawn. Nw'r ffleasyn ar ymdala bawn, ni cyn o'r rhywun ffolatri ar y teisiadam, lwysgar yn pair mor dynasol. Blasyn gyore roedd eith mar o'r ffraid, yn aethon yn ar o'r ffriol, ach o'r cwyn yn ffôn ar y hwntan, am lot siarad, ni ha, nilish. Nw'r ilyn ar ymgishgan, treach ddeg masdra, ar tiorin y diadfwy, mae rhwyd y gion boch ac y hwysa ac y pwysor. I siwp yn fwy sdeir y gian eith yn rhoi ashti yn ein, ac y gwysyn ein ein, a yn o'ch eich marmolid, nilish ac eich siarad, mae'r ysmaelach eich. Gwydir o'ch eich erwntio, ac y bwyr i'n cwr o'ch cholenia, a lwysg o'n eir yn hynpwr. Ar rei o'r loed, tos na hath a hanafen, i marg o'r troed yn o'ch rei, dyr o'ch eich eich, a siap gawn yn rhoi ashti. I take the lid off the jar of marmalade, and morning fills with the bitter and all sweet taste of Algiers, Morocco, Seville, where fragrant bombs hang from the ancient branches of trees. When they explode on the white earth, I like the ones with blood in them best. The air is scorched for miles around. I taste the noise of riots and street markets in places I have never been, but that my nose still remembers their bitter, no, sweet smell. When I return to the kitchen, exhausted from my journey over the borders of the senses, get real, we say, frowning. I bought those oranges in the butcher's yesterday, and it was I who made the marmalade, bitter sweet, the way you like it. Exactly, they say, as the fragrant bombs of your body burn the air all around me. The riot has already started in the street market of my heart, just there, beside that stall of oranges.